You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a monthly program of author interviews and book reviews with a local perspective, and I'm your host, Chris Wilson. Today we'll be talking about a couple of books, Ruth Ozeki's A Tale for the Time Being, and that's for all of you who are worrying about the tsunami, Atul Gawande's Being Mortal, a book I think everyone should read. Last month, I think everyone read the article in The New Yorker about the big one and what it's going to do to the Pacific Northwest. For a slightly different take on a tsunami in the Pacific, I recommend that you read Ruth Ozeki's Tale for the Time Being. It is the story of Nao, who is a Japanese teenager, and it's also the story of Ruth and Oliver, who live on an island north of Vancouver Island. It takes place from the 90s to 2009, both in Japan and Alaska, and it has a lot to do with the Fukushima tsunami, and it also has to do with an amazing view of life. I think that everyone will enjoy it and talk about it with their friends. I also think that people should not be afraid of being mortal. Being Mortal is the book by Atul Gawande. It is about bringing meaning to your life, being the author of your life. It is a book for all ages to read, especially those who are taking care of older parents or are thinking about their own aging process. He brings to mind how important it is that we all have responsibilities and that we all have some control, controlling our own time, what we do, when we do it, understanding the timeline and the story of our life, and making sure that others understand what is important to us. I highly recommend Being Mortal by Atul Gawande. We will be talking to author and actress and essayist and activist Marianne Leone, author of Jessie, A Mother's Story. Marianne has had an amazing life. She started out as an actress and a screenwriter and essayist. As an actress, she's had a recurring role on HBO's The Sopranos and has appeared in films by John Sayles, Martin Scorsese, and others. She's married to actor Chris Cooper, and today we're mostly going to be talking about her memoir, Jessie, A Mother's Story. It's a chronicle of the remarkable life and untimely death of her child, who died suddenly at age 17. His life is celebrated through the Jessie Cooper Give Back to Society Scholarship and the Jessie Advocacy Fund at the Federation for Children with Special Needs, and the Jessie Ho, an outrigger named for him at Access Sport America, a charity supported by the Jessie Cooper Foundation. Marianne is here because of the Port Townsend Film Festival, and I'd like to thank Jan Halliday for asking me to interview her. The film festival this year takes place on September 25th, 26th, and 27th, Where else can you see 80 films in 8 theaters in walkable, historic Port Townsend? I certainly am going to be a participant in this year's film festival, and I encourage you to think about volunteering and, of course, taking in some of the movies. This year, we're pretty excited because Beau Bridges, an award-winning actor and environmentalist, will be here walking our historic streets. And on Friday night, he'll be presenting and talking about his wonderful movie, The Fabulous Baker Boys. That would be Friday night at 6:30. The following night, Chris Cooper, an award-winning actor, will be presenting his film, Adaptation. And then our author, Marianne Leone, who happens to be married to Chris Cooper, she will be presenting the formative film, My Left Foot. And she'll be talking about Christy Brown as a man with cerebral palsy, born into a working-class Irish family. He was portrayed by Oscar winner Daniel Day-Lewis. And I think that will be a really interesting afternoon, and I'm looking forward to seeing My Left Foot again. Welcome to Book Lovers Cafe, Marianne. Thank you for being here.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm really delighted to be here. When Jesse was a baby, the looks he got on the street were mostly of the generic, admiring, baby-cooing types from the tottering elderlies of Hoboken, the same ones who felt perfectly comfortable telling me to put a hat on him because he looked cold or to adjust his blanket because he looked hot. When he got older, we rolled up towels to keep his lolling head in place in a regular stroller because we couldn't afford fancy adaptive equipment. When it became evident he was disabled, the slackness of his torso muscle tone and the spasticity of his arms and legs elicited different kinds of looks. Some people stared unabashedly. Some gave a fleeting look of pity. Some looked away quickly, as if the mere sight of Jesse would bring a curse down on them. There were days when the looks didn't bother me, and there were times when they sent me whirling back in time to the lake, the working-class part of Newton, Massachusetts, where I grew up. I stand there, the adolescent, mouthy Marianne, hand on hip, face contorted, voice dripping with contempt. Take a picture. It lasts longer. That was then. Now, when people stared at Jesse, I danced a haka for them, loudly declaring so the gawkers could hear, "Jesse, you're so handsome, people can't take their eyes off you." People looked away, embarrassed at being caught, but it was true. Jesse was physically beautiful. He had huge, liquid, saint-like, dark brown eyes and perfectly shaped full lips. A halo of platinum edged his light brown hair and lined his features when he was very young, his inner light made manifest. He had a high forehead and a strong, straight nose with smooth olive skin that seemed to glow from within. All the features that on my face were too strong looked great on Jess, enhanced by Chris's high brow and curvy lips. The muscle slackness that affected his trunk had spared his facial features. Jesse's face was expressive and mobile, a huge smile often stretching those perfect lips to reveal a row of pearly little baby teeth. I was so seduced by his beauty, I was giddy around him.
You are listening to Book Lovers Cafe, and that was Marianne Leone reading from her book, Jesse, A Mother's Story. So in this chapter, this is beginning of chapter 5, you said that Jesse was the light and you are the mirror that tries to reflect him. Can you tell us a little bit more about Jesse and who he was?
I knew who he was at the very beginning. He was my beloved boy that we fought to save even in the first weeks of his life. We were told, well, he wouldn't make it till the end of the week. And I felt like it was a battle from the very beginning because in the beginning, it was the medical establishment telling us that there were operations he needed that it turned out he didn't need, or that he would never be intelligent, or that he would never do this, or he'd never do that. And then later, it was the battles with the school. But within all of that, there was Jesse. There was this kid who was the one who always got the joke first at the table. This temperament, this beautiful temperament, and this intelligence, this curiosity about the world, even though his body didn't work. He was really trapped within his body.
When did you know that Jesse had cerebral palsy?
We didn't really get the diagnosis until months after he was born. I mean, he spent the first 2.5 months of his life in the neonatal intensive care unit. And then, you know, he was sent home and he wasn't meeting the regular developmental milestones. And then we finally got the diagnosis when I think he was about 6 to 8 months old.
Well, before we go any farther, I want to assure our audience that this book is not a sad and sorrowful book. It is really,
oh, thank you.
No, it is really full of great humor and joy and just hope. And so part of that is because of the structure of the book, I think, and your inclusion of the photos and the poems and the way you tell the story. Did you decide that yourself, or did your editors and friends help you? How did that come to be? Because it's really unique.
Well, what was interesting was that I didn't want it to be linear. I just had a feeling that I didn't want it to be linear, except for the part where I tell the story about the school and our battles with the school, because mm-hmm. that had to be linear. Mm-hmm. But I was very influenced by Abigail Thomas, Three Dog Lights. Have you read that? It's
no,
a fantastic, it's a wonderful memoir. And she, too, has a great sense of humor. And she's, you know, talking about life after her husband's traumatic brain injury. And she's a fantastic writer. And it was completely not linear. And I thought, well, you know, there's a precedent for it. Now, as far as the photographs, at first I actually did not. I was dismayed when they wanted to put photographs in, because I felt, mm-hmm. oh, I guess my prose isn't enough. But other people assured me that it was, oh, we wanted to see him. We really know we're glad that, you know. So, so that was that. And it was funny. My agent said to me, my literary agent said, okay, we're going to send this book out. And if 18 out of the 20 publishers I'm going to send this to come back and say this needs to be linear, then we'll talk.
Oh, I see.
But it was picked up by the fourth publisher, so I was really lucky.
Congratulations. Congratulations. Well, I did love looking at the photographs. I liked seeing you and your husband, the caregivers, and, of course, the beautiful Jesse, because then I knew, yes, you know, you can see the light in him through the mm-hmm. through the photographs. It's not just the mother's love, which, you know, erases all problems.
Absolutely. I mean, I was aware that, you know, you mm-hmm. can totally be looking through a haze, because mm-hmm. I was giddy, as I said in the book, around Jesse. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I fell totally madly, wildly, deeply in love with him, and was willing to do anything, what it took, mm-hmm. you know, to make him, to let him be a human in the world, you know?
Yes, yes. Well, the beginning of the story is full of premonitions and dreams and portents. And then after Jesse's death, the search for contact and signs. How did your experience during the whole 17 years of his life, before he was born and afterwards, veer away, which I think it definitely did, from the Western medicalized version of grief?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's something I still deal with. And I, you know, I wrote an essay, if people are interested in reading this, it's on my website, which is MarianneLeoneCooper.com. Weirdly, there's another person who spells their first name exactly like mine. But I wrote this op-ed for the Globe because I was so furious at the medicalization of grief that is happening, that the DSM was considering calling it a major depressive...
Let's tell people what DSM
stands for. Oh, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that psychiatrists use. Mm-hmm. They were considering that if you were still, you still had insomnia, you still were depressed, I think it was something like 6 weeks after someone died, then you had a major depressive disorder. And mm-hmm. that's just insane. That's mm-hmm. just crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, it has been 10 years, and I still have days where, you know, it's really hard. So mm-hmm. add that to the fact that when you have a child with a severe disability, your own grief is minimalized, because people actually say things like, it's for the best.
And not only for someone who has been disabled, but, you know, for someone who's, you know, suffered a chronic disease, or, you know, in many
addiction,
cases.
Addiction, all of that.
It doesn't help,
yeah.
does it?
God.
No.
It's, yeah.
Well, Joan Didion's book, The Year of Magical Thinking, was brought to my mind. I think mm-hmm. that, you know, that helped.
Excellent Company.
Yes. I
thought of that, and I thought, oh, damn, I wanted that title. And mm-hmm. then I thought, well, really, how are you thinking magically? Because I thought I was thinking far more magically than she was, mm-hmm. because I was totally in fantasy land. I mean, I think it's how you get through, you know?
And I think it helps people that are going through something like this, which we all do at one time or another, understand that they're not crazy. That
right.
this is the more of the normal way. I also, you know, thought about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's five stages of grief, and
I don't think I didn't think that applied.
No, and it's been disproven, or you know, it's been really re-looked at. And because the reason I thought about it was that so many doctors and educators just threw the word denial at you over and over. Yes. You want to talk about that?
Well, that was because I was convinced that Jesse understood everything that was going on. I remember when he was four, we took him to a neurologist, and I said, you know, he has total receptive language, meaning he understands what I'm saying to him, even though he cannot speak himself. And it wasn't cognitive. It was the muscles that control your mouth. Apparently there are, you know, many, many muscles to control your mouth. You wouldn't know it from the way bloviators bloviate, but... and he looked at me with pity and said, he'll never be intellectually normal. And then he said, are you planning on having more children, Mrs. Cooper? Mm-hmm. And this was in front of Jesse, by the way.
Of course, on the way home, don't think he can understand.
He didn't think he could understand, right. You know. And on the way home, Chris actually wept. You know, and said, what did he mean? What did he mean? And I said, you know what he meant. He meant get a good one. And I was outraged. And when we finally, you know, tested Jesse years later, I mean, it was a few years later that we finally were able to test him on a computer, and he was in the 99th percentile. I actually wrote to him, and I said, I know it's easy to confuse yourself with God when you have all these anxious parents hanging on your every word and you have acolyte interns following you around, but you're not God. You're a murderer of children's potential, because if we had believed you, we maybe would have stopped inputting to Jesse. We would have loved him just the same, but we wouldn't have been reading him Yeats, for example.
That is definitely true. And you also met people who, you know, were ready to kind of succumb to the powers of what the doctor said or what the school said.
I totally understand that, though, because I'm first generation. My mother's from Italy, mm-hmm. right? So here's my mother with this accent. My mother would have been cowed by the presence of learned people, shall we say.
Yes.
I mean, we've started here in Massachusetts, the Jesse Advocacy Fund. It's for low-income and people for whom English is a second language who have to, you know, go into these school meetings, hear their child discussed, you know, as if he weren't there. People who speak in acronyms and, oh, my God, it's terrifying. You know, mm-hmm. I have a college degree and hate authority, and I was cowed. I can't imagine what it would be like if English wasn't your first language, you know?
I was thinking about you as a person, Marianne, as an actress, as an emotional, kind of volatile person, in touch with things like that. Did your study of acting and your practice help you, you know, be Jesse's mom and communicate with him in any way?
Well, you know, I did refer to that in the book. It's funny that the way Chris and I were both trained was this Meisner method, which is, you know, you're repeating back and forth these words that eventually the words become meaningless, and you're listening to the meaning underneath the words. And I thought, wow, that was like a crash course for Chris and me to become Jesse's, you know, parents. But as far as dealing with authorities, no, that did not help me. It didn't help me at all.
Mm-hmm.
What helped was that Chris and I were a good balance, and that my husband was much more, you know, level and calm. So it helped.
But because of his career, he was gone a lot.
He was gone a lot.
So what was your support? How did you get through those long periods of time when it was just you and Jesse? What happened?
Well, I mean, we always had, you know, we had fantastic nannies, these mm-hmm. Irish girls, starting with, as I sainted them all in the book, St. Bernadette of Athy, who was our first, who was with us for 6 years. And she was, you know, looking at her, I understood why my left foot was the way it was, because this girl had no... Jesse was Jesse. She would look at him fondly and say, ah, he's himself, he is. And, she, you know, we went away. We dared to go away for the first time for a weekend, just an overnight, when she was taking care of Jesse. And we came back, and she said, he knows his colors. Now, he wasn't two yet.
Oh.
And she said, show them blue, Jesse. And, you know, he would slam his little hand on the light-up piano, and blue would come out. And she just wouldn't assumed he would get it and went for it. And so we always had these fantastic, as I said in the book, I felt like Jesse's light drew them to us.
Mm-hmm.
We had these fantastic women helping us,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And so they enabled you to, you know, to take some time for your marriage and yourself, and also they saw things in Jesse that not the passerby on the street or the doctor at the monthly visit or whenever.
Right.
How often
Although we had a fantastic pediatrician. He introduced
good.
Me to the woman who became my mentor, mm-hmm. Mary Somoza, who had twin girls with severe cerebral palsy, one verbal, one nonverbal. Both girls, she took on the New York City school system and
mm-hmm.
won.
Wow.
She's an amazing woman,
story.
And she has Irish charm. I mean, I just had the rage element. She had the charm, too, so she got a lot farther. But her girls are both amazing, amazing girls.
Well, you know, Jesse had a sense of humor.
He did.
How did you recognize that?
Well, the first time I saw it was, I think he was like 8 months old, and he was listening to the Chipmunks, and he just burst out laughing. And I thought, this kid gets it. What are they talking about? I mean, that's normal for a kid to get. You know, mm-hmm. I was searching for normal reactions to things, and he seemed to have normal reactions to things. You know, he seemed to react normally. And the first time, Brandy, who was our longest-lasting person that stayed with us, one of the first nights she was babysitting him, he kept clicking for her attention. He would click to say yes or to get your attention with his tongue, like a kiss sound, like
mm-hmm.
that. And she had sat down, and he kept indicating his head and clicking, and then she was like, what is it? And she was asking him all these questions. She finally gets up, and he bursts out laughing because she's sat in the dog vomit. I mean, all right, it's something a six-year-old would crack up at, but he had all of those normal reactions.
The first night she sat in the dog vomit on the
couch. She did, and he loved it, of course.
And then also, I don't mean to interrupt, but then you tell these stories about friends that he had at school, tell about, you know, how he went to visit at
when he was in first grade, and it was the rough boys that liked him.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this kid who kept saying to his mother, you know, I want to have Jesse over because he hates coloring as much as I do. And it was only after a while that he told her, well, you know, Jesse doesn't speak and he uses a wheelchair. And Jesse came over and they were racing around with the wheelchair. I mean, I had to like kind of hold my breath and look away because Jesse was laughing so hard. But as he got older, he had a girlfriend, and she kept saying, her mother, who was also a teacher, said, finally realizes that Jesse is nonverbal quadriplegic, and she said, well, how do you communicate? And she said, oh, I can see behind his eyes.
Young
and
love.
I was so touched by that. That is such an amazing thing to say. I can see behind his eyes. Mm-hmm. I know what he's thinking. And they would, you know, we put in a little indoor pool for him, like a lap pool. And he had a neck brace and he could swim. And so he would be there with her and I'd be like hovering nearby, but not near enough so that they could see me. And I was thinking, the perfect boyfriend, because she's like blah, 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 blah. And he's clicking every once in a while.
Yes, listening. A good listener.
But also his friend Kyle, who I still see. Kyle, who swam with me every day last year.
Mm-hmm.
What I find so fascinating is he's getting his degree in languages. And he became Jesse's best friend, this boy, you know, who had no speech.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I'd like to talk also about, you know, the difference in having a disabled child, nonverbal child in the 90s versus when he became, you know, in middle school in the 2000s, and how, you know, pre-internet versus then
internet. The big difference. That's totally it, Chris.
Yeah, and
the computer
programs for adaptive learning.
Well, when I speak now, I mean, when the book came out, I would speak at the Federation for Children with Special Needs here in Boston. I love the parent-to-parent groups because they're always the strongest. They're always the best groups for disability. And you know, I would speak to people and I would hear gasps. I mean, young mothers, when they realized, oh, my God, what's it like not to have the internet to find, you know, community.
Mm-hmm.
It could feel lonely, and it did feel lonely, that you couldn't find other people. I mean, I relied on a paper newsletter that people sent.
Right, and you sent out letters to parents that you weren't even sure that, you know, who they were or...
Absolutely,
I wrote to
Helen Harrison, who wrote the premature baby book. I mean, it was really old school to get information. I did research in medical libraries. I mean, it was crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really hard, and we had some missteps because of that, you know. But when I think now, we have friends who have a little boy who's 6 years old now, and he has cerebral palsy, he's nonverbal. He is using an iPad, and the apps that you can get, number one, it's way cheaper, and number two, it's way more accessible. You know, when Jesse was this kid's age, Boston College had a prototype iGaze computer set up. We heard about it. It was a big thing. We took Jesse. They put electrodes around his eye, and Jesse proved that he could read.
How old was he when that happened, when you got
he
to
was
go to the...
six.
Oh, amazing.
Six. And so there he is reading, I think it was a book, Just Grandma and Me.
Mm-hmm.
And the prose on the page said, we wanted to fly the kite, but the wind was too strong. And as he's reading each word, it's highlighted, you know, his eye as it hits. And then I said, what word up there describes you, Jesse? And he hit strong, 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 strong.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, that was a prototype. It's no longer a prototype. It's a real thing that you can use now if you can't use your hands.
The whole idea of inclusion, did your ideas change about that from, you know, when Jesse was six to when he was in high school, about, you know, what the ideal situation would be for a child like Jesse?
You know, I think, and I say this to parents now, I think it's individual. There's a reason it's called individualized education program. For example, when we won the fact that Jesse could actually go to school and not be shipped out somewhere, I didn't want him to go full-time because he was in a wheelchair. He was spastic. I wanted him to be able to come home and be tutored part of the day one-on-one and be able to stretch out his limbs and run vocabulary words lying on his bed if that was better for him physically.
Right. Right.
You know? So every kid, it's a different story. I didn't feel like Jesse was in school so that, you know, the other kids would learn something great, but it turned out that way.
That is a good thing. So thank you so much for talking to us today, Mary Ann.
Thank you.
And we're certainly looking forward to meeting you in person at
I can't wait. It looks so beautiful there.
Film Festival. It will be a very fun weekend. You've been listening to Book Lovers Cafe, a program for everyone who hasn't read everything. And today we talked to Mary Ann Leone, author of Jesse, A Mother's Story. And we reviewed some really good books. And I'd like you to join me next time to talk about more books and authors. I'm your host, Chris Wilson. I'd like to thank Mike Schlexer, who's in the booth with me today, Nora Petrich, Amanda Thieroff, and all of the volunteers and supporters that make this wonderful radio station possible. See you next time.